You're listening to a special presentation of Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. In 1992, a young girl named Leah Babian found herself in a strange and new place. She and her family were Armenian refugees who were resettled by the College of Southern Idaho. Fast forward to today, and Leah is a business owner in downtown Twin Falls, the mother of two children, and an advocate for young people who have experienced war all around the world. Add to that the list of accomplishments, author. Leah has published her very first book. It's a memoir, and she joined us back in July to talk about it. We started by asking her about what she hopes people will learn when they read her book called Liminal. Welcome to the program, Leah.
Good to be here. Thank you.
So you wrote this book, it's called Liminal, as a dedication to children of war. What are you hoping people who read it will learn?
The current numbers, I believe, is 70 million displaced people in the world, and half of them are children. So I'm hoping that the voices of the most vulnerable, abused, and invisible population, children, is echoed through what I write, and at least acknowledge that there's all these children that are traumatized by a lot of these adult war games and sanctions and famines and just manufactured conflicts that are taking place, that it kills their childhood and it traumatizes them, and they will grow to be the adults of the future. And that's the base that they will function out of.
So your early childhood, you lived in Azerbaijan before the fall of the Berlin Wall. If you wouldn't mind, I'd really like you to read a passage from Liminal, because it talks about your childhood a little bit.
My earliest life memory is playing on the beach as a child, spending summers with all my family and relatives, cooking shish kebabs on the beaches of the Caspian Sea. My little fingers sweeping through the warm sand, finding seashells and the smell of salt sea air and shish kebab. The sound of waves, music, nardi, that's backgammon, dice rolling across game boards, and adults laughing. Feeling the hot sun on my skin, playful, careless days, and free of concern. Eating fresh fruits, sweets, surrounded by all my family, playing with my cousins, sweet and innocent as childhood memories should be. When I reflect back on my childhood to find comfort in pure and good memories, the only one that is not tainted by evil is this one memory. I hold on to it as vividly as I can. I treasure this childhood memory. It is sacred to me.
And that is a passage from your new memoir, Liminal, because your family was part of the Christian minority there. So you write that you can remember your parents being friends with Muslims, being friends with Jews. What values did your family instill in you with ethnic cleansing going on?
So when the Soviet Union was dismantled, a lot of the ethnic tension that looked like ethnic tension really evolved out of the struggle for power, independence, and economic survival. And the politicians echoed anti-Armenian rhetoric and nativism, populism, just all of these extreme narratives that are the classic divide, the classic creating of an us and them, and the othering of a minority. So neighbors turned against each other for the sake of survival. And my family, my parents were so conscious and so wise. They, even as little children, we were not exampled to see this conflict through the lens of religion. My father was always very politically minded and always very, kind of a history nerd. And he would talk about history and always put it in the scope of people surviving. And not go the easy route of stirring biases and going with that this is a Christian-Muslim conflict. Because the day before the ethnic killing campaigns, we were Christian and Muslims too. For decades before, for centuries before in that region, there were wars, there were empires that would conquer, but people also got along. So what was different was the stirring of the emotions, the stirring of the the scapegoating and all of the fears.
What is it like for you now to have gone through what you went through as a child? And as you mentioned, you use the word the separating of the others. To be living in the culture and climate that we live in today, when it can very well be argued that the same thing is happening here in the United States.
It's very sad to see a very great nation be vulnerable to that rhetoric, to be stirred against one another, just within the boundaries here, within the border here, not even an other that's somewhere else, but within here, people are othered against each other. When it comes to genocide,
and you went through things like that.
Yeah, it sounds the same. It's the same kind of narrative. It's the same kind of fear mongling. It's the same tactics. The dehumanization of a population, of calling them vermin, and that they're taking jobs, that they're causing us to lose something. It's the same language. It's the same type of emotion that's being provoked, but it's said in a different language. And when it comes to genocide policy, you know, there's stages. There's 10 stages of genocide, the last one being the denial or the cover-up. Stage 7 and 8, I believe, by international stage standards, is the separation of families, the relocation, the forced relocation of families, and the warehousing of people. And so that's just really scary to watch going on in a country that for me became a second chance at life, and for my family became a safe haven. Safe haven, to now watch its nature either change or just going through some kind of a very questionable kind of growing pain into maybe its new identity.
Let's go back to after the fall of the Soviet Union, because while the West was celebrating this, there was a rise in nationalism that really swept Azerbaijan, where you were living. And Armenians, like your family, were targeted, including your aunt. You and your parents and your brother did escape the ethnic cleansing there, and you did flee to Armenia, only to become refugees after a 6.8 earthquake displaced thousands of people. Talk to me about what it was like to write about those memories. Was it painful? Was it cathartic? Was it both?
So in the moment when it was happening, my parents, you know, put my brother and I on a bus. They didn't know where the bus was going. We were separated from them. The bus was just leaving away from the killings where that violence was taking place. And Armenia experienced earthquakes. So not only were we refugees fleeing ethnic killings, but then we, within a few months, became environmental refugees because there was no shelter for the influx of refugees, fleeing into Armenia. So at that time, it just was part of just the next thing we're doing, the next move. And in my child consciousness, I don't think it really resonated that this was not normal. So in 2005, I would keep a journal. As soon as I started learning English in fourth grade, my teacher, Mrs. Gunter, I have to say her name because she'd made such a big difference in my life. She noticed that I was very disturbed and just traumatized and being in a new country. And she gave me a journal to write things down in. So I kept since 94, I kept a journal, and my English improved. So I would write my thoughts a little more clearer. But in 2005, I had the opportunity with my family to go back to Armenia and visit the school utility closet that we lived in. That was our shelter.
Oh my gosh.
During the 4 years we were waiting to be vetted to be picked up by a country. So I did go back, and being there on location, just something about coming back to that space and in that energy, just felt like meeting the girl that I left behind there, because I feel like that girl didn't come with me to the United States. It was a completely different, it was the traumatized version that came with me to this country. So that really helped me process and gather photographs from relatives. understand, put into a chronological understanding how things mm-hmm. happened, because my child's mind organized it a little different. So then I was able to come back and organize my thoughts and write more without the intention of writing a book, but just to process my own mm-hmm. trauma and with my family.
So it's got to be that kind of cleansing process to write, and then it turns into a memoir.
I don't know if I've reached the stage where it's cleansing yet.
Right.
Because with writing the book, recently publishing it in November, and then speaking engagements, a lot of that is a trigger. A lot of that is a reliving of all those memories. But it's important to go through those emotions now in a mature and in a safe way and process them and just understand them, that they had value. You know, if you give those experiences value, understanding and compassion, it's easier to process. It's easier to cleanse or come to a closure. Mm-hmm. So I'm in that. That's the stage I'm in now. And I believe I'll probably be in this stage, this phase of it, for a while, because this is new to me.
That was Leah Babian, a refugee who lives in Twin Falls. We'll return to this interview with her from July in just a minute. I'm Gemma Gaudette. You're listening to Idaho Matters. You're listening to a special presentation of Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We're going to return now to our July conversation with Leah Babian. She is an Armenian refugee who resettled in Idaho, and she published a memoir about her experiences. Here's her reading from her book, Liminal.
My family was brought to America in 1992, resettled by the College of Southern Idaho Refugee Program to Twin Falls, a city in the state of Idaho. Immediately after arriving as refugees, my parents were hurried into lowest wage employment. My brother and I placed in public schools. Our family thrown into a new society and expected to assimilate on our own, expected to start a new life without any information, resources, or support to navigate a society, a government, laws, economy, and a culture completely new to us. Disturbed by the ethnic killings we experienced and culture shock on top of what we just survived, only compounded our trauma. We had no space, no time, no opportunity to heal individually or as a family.
How do you think that affected you as a little girl? I mean, just hearing this is heartbreaking.
Yeah, I've come to understand and come to terms with the fact that my parents didn't raise me, that it was their trauma that raised me. And I have so much love and compassion for them, because they too were winging it. Everyone's winging it at being a parent. I'm a mom now, and
I still don't know what I'm doing.
I'm winging it, and, you know, the most traumatic thing for my children is like when Netflix isn't loading. I cannot imagine what it was like for my mother and my father, who are both in their, you know, in their late 30s, early 40s, to have to protect your children from being slaughtered. I just cannot imagine the kind of repeat real life horror that would repeat, and the high level of anxiety and the high level of stress mm-hmm. and the flashbacks they probably still experience when, you know, they don't hear from me if they told me call, check in, because that just doesn't go away. You move. We moved. We moved to another side of the planet. We moved to a completely different continent. But your trauma moves with you, your psychology, your mentality, your pain, your suffering, it moves with you.
And then to top it off, you go to school, you deal with PTSD, but you're bullied in school as well. Were you ever angry at being moved to to Idaho and to how other kids, other Idahoans were treating you in the midst of everything that you were going through.
I think those earlier years were really difficult because I felt like a mute because you don't have language skills, so you can't. And I was a very active and a very articulate child in both Armenian and in Russian, fluent in both. And so being not able to communicate, to even be able to explain to a teacher that something was not my fault, that something was someone else's fault, or to explain to a teacher that I can't afford, my parents can't afford these supplies. It's not that I'm a bad student. We just literally, we're so poor, we can't afford supplies. And this is before all the awareness and all the humanitarian efforts.
Right.
This is when you were dropped from the sky and you were, expected to survive. That was really difficult, especially, I think, after experiencing moving so much and all the violence and all the negativity and just that emotion of fear all the time. It eventually felt like, to me, I remember feeling that there was just no room, that this planet was too crowded for me or my family, that for whatever reason, we were not deserving of life or of dignity, that we just were not favored by God. We just were basically the disposables, because that's the way we felt. I felt as a child, and everything in my environment proved it and validated it. So being bullied, although it was very, bullying is an experience a lot of children go through. I think compounding all that with the already experienced trauma and being bullied by a country and a government, mm-hmm. I think at that point it just felt like this planet didn't have room for us, that we just weren't. It was too crowded for us. We weren't supposed to be here on Earth.
We are unfortunately running out of time, but one thing I want to talk about very quickly is how you still talk about compassion in your book, but also life in Twin Falls today. You are a business owner. You are a mom. Talk to me very quickly about life today, even after everything that you have gone through.
Yeah, this has been just an incredible journey. I feel that just myself, I can't speak for all the members of my family, but I feel like I've lived probably 50 lifetimes in just this one lifetime of mine. Being a business owner has allowed me to just be creative in so many ways and just express and connect with community members and work on bigger goods that trickle down and do good for so many people. So that's been a true privilege. I reached a point, I think, in my life where I decided that, I realized how blessed I was because so many of my relatives didn't make it. So it would be an insult to them, to their honor, if I didn't live my life to the fullest. So every breath is extra. Every day is extra after you survive genocide, after you survive ethnic killings. And you cannot take it for granted. I do not take it for granted. And so I try to live where I can create and create something for others, because my life was saved for, I think, that purpose.
That was refugee Leah Babian, who was on the show back in July talking about her memoir, Liminal. We'll be back in just a minute with more of our best interviews from 2019. I'm Gemma Gaudette. This is Idaho Matters.